that the courts were looking at. When she negotiated the original petition, there were absolutely no allegations in the petition regarding drug use. And her issue is she was denied due process by that not being in the petition. It was never brought up. And in fact, she even took a drug test for the department. She tested clean. There was absolutely no reason to have an objective in the case plan regarding her submitting to a drug test. When we're looking at the petition that's filed or that's negotiated, that's what's putting the parent on notice what's at issue. The children have been removed. They're being told that there are safety threats present that the parent needs to alleviate in order to reunify. That petition is what's putting the parent on notice of what they need to do in order to reunify with the child. When they're given a case plan after the allegations are substantiated, they relate to what's actually presented in the petition. In this case, there were allegations regarding lack of protective capacity, domestic violence, and those aren't anything that she objected to because they rationally related to the allegations in the petition.
But let's say that they don't even have this. Isn't it under, the condition is under reasonable belief that she's under the influence? That's the only time they can test her, or is there just random tests? What's the actual thing that's done in this order?
So when the case plan was originally presented, the department was asking to randomly drug test any time that they wanted. After hearing arguments, the district court judge amended the case plan to read that the department can drug test if they have reasonable suspicion that she's using drugs.
Well, is that true in every case, though, that if there's reasonable belief that somebody's under the influence, that you can drug test? I mean, why is this case so different than any other case that you handle?
And just as I have to disagree that there actually is not a standard stated in NRS 432B regarding when drug testing can be done. Usually, a report is made. It's investigated by CPS. If they believe that there's something to take to the court, a petition's filed, parents given an opportunity to go to trial, have the state prove the allegations in the petition, and if there's if there are allegations of drug use in the petition and they're substantiated, then the parent has to, part of the case plan is to drug test.
But where in 432B does it require that the action steps in the case plan necessarily relate to the facts alleged in the petition?
It's not clearly stated, but 432B.540 states that once the petition is, once the allegations in the petition are substantiated, the department must provide a plan of services to be completed by the parent in order to reunify.
How do you make the leap that that requires them to, the action steps have to be related to the abuse and neglect? I don't hear anything in that language that relates at all.
Well, because it all stems from the substantiated allegations in the petition. So if the allegations aren't substantiated, there's no reason for a case plan or anything like that. It's the once there's a substantiated petition, then they're given a case plan to follow in order to reunify. If the department could put anything they want in the petition in the case plan, there would be no reason to have a petition. Once the state's interfering in the parent-child relationship, their means have to be narrowly tailored. We're looking at they're given the due process by having a petition filed against them, telling them what's at issue, what are the safety threats that the state believes are present. They're given an opportunity to go through a hearing. After the hearing, the judge or hearing master finds by a preponderance of the evidence that those allegations are true, and after that they're given a case plan. So there would be no need to go through that process, have the petition substantiated, if the department's allowed to put whatever they deem necessary in the case plan.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Has the department defined what reasonable belief is for a search?
There isn't anything that's defined. There isn't anything that's in the statute that defines reasonable belief. What Judge Tootin found was that if there's slurred speech or some other indication that she's under the influence.
Does it appear from what has transpired that the department is saying the reasonable belief is strictly related to the conduct or actions of Ms. Hernandez and not other actions in that household that she'd be tested? Or is reasonable belief because of something else in the household they'd want to test her? Do we know?
We don't know because it wasn't clarified in the order what that reasonable belief is, what the standard is, if it's the individual belief of the worker that the reasonable suspicion. It was never clarified in the order.
This is a collision situation, so to speak. For the best interest of the child is very, very important to the state. And individuals have a constitutional protection for as to searches. And as we've been educated in the last few years, even with reasonable belief, i.e. the traffic stops these days, and people have reasonable beliefs, and that's not good enough. But yet, we have been doing this dance with constitutional provisions in the best interest of the child. Can we reconcile that? Or what's your viewpoint? And I'm going to ask the state the same question.
Well, I believe we can, because it all goes back to the petition that's filed against the parent. It puts them on notice. It gives them the due process notice of what's at issue. They have an opportunity to rebut any evidence that's presented by the state, and it's state's burden to prove those allegations. And after that, a case plan is developed. So if we look at what's in the petition, what's been adjudicated, there's no question of what goes in the case plan if it's been already adjudicated by the judge, and the judge finds that those are the safety threats that the parent needs to remedy in order to reunify.
Has she been drug tested since the first drug test at all?
No, she has not.
And just so I understand, make sure my understanding is complete, the actual issue is that if an agent reasonably believes that she's under the influence of a controlled substance, they can ask for a drug test. It's not like she's under a blanket order at any time and any for any reason she can be drug tested. Somebody's got to have an agent has to have a reasonable belief. Is that that's just my question? Is that correct or incorrect?
That's what the Judge Tootin's order says.
Okay.
That if they have reasonable belief, that they can drug test her.
Got it.
And that kind of brings me to the second issue, whether it should be a reasonable belief or a probable cause standard for drug testing.
Okay. Do you want to go into that now or at 416?
I'll stay with the rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Felicia Quinlan and I represent the Department of Family Services in today's case. Justices, the two issues before us today are whether or not Ms. Hernandez, who failed to protect her one-year-old daughter from some significant injuries about her head and face, should be required to undergo drug testing if her DFS caseworker has a reasonable suspicion that she is under the influence. In this case, Your Honors, The original proposition from the Department of Family Services was for random testing. And in that case plan, which was provided to Mom, Ms. Hernandez, and her counsel before that disposition hearing, they reviewed it. That's always a primary question at these hearings. Did you have a chance to review the case plan and the report? And upon counsel's argument, Judge Tootin declined to order Ms. Hernandez to undergo random drug testing, instead imposing upon the department the requirement that she must individually appear to be intoxicated during meetings with the Department of Family Services. And the significance of that is that she has to go to either a pre-planned meeting at the offices of the Department of Family Services or doing a home visit with her and have been using drugs and appearing under the influence. And the judge actually gave specific examples, such as slurring speech or erratic behavior, that would give this individual suspicion to the caseworker before he may ask for the test.
Why wouldn't that be put into the petition to begin with? I mean, it seems to me if it was a concern, did it become a concern later after the petition was filed? Was there ever an attempt to amend the petition to make those concerns apparent?
Two things, Your Honor. In this case, there was an amended petition. As has counsel previously stated, that was negotiated. And because the nature of the reason this case came in was regarding violence in the home towards the children and towards Ms. Hernandez herself, that the CPS investigator did administer a drug test to Ms. Hernandez. She did test clean. It didn't go in the petition. However, in the process of how the Department of Family Services services families under the court's purview, the CPS investigator is charged with identifying immediate issues and reporting those to the district attorney. Thereafter, after the petition is adjudicated, the parents meet with their DFS caseworker who will garner reunification efforts throughout the life of the case. And in those meetings, when they go over the case plan, oftentimes the adversarial portion of the case is over and the parents either make disclosures about issues that they may have that they were not raised before, or the DFS caseworker finds out more information, not just from what CPS told them, that there are issues with this family. And in this case, the underlying reasons of why a woman would leave a one-year-old child with a man who slapped her in the face and allow all these bruisings and then later lie for him aren't clearly known, because that kind of defies logic to say that a mother would do that. So in assessing
the
family...
Counsel, that begs the question, and I appreciate what you're saying, but we're back to imposing a condition upon the mother for behavior that's not included in this petition, or even alleged behavior that's not in the petition. If the behavior is any place, it's the gentleman who did the slapping and her inability to indicate to him that that's not acceptable behavior, he can't be there. But coming to the crux of it, we have a balancing of the rights of individuals and the best interest of the child. And I'm kind of concerned as I was rereading the second time to get a better bite on it, because as I said, I understand our mandate, the best interest of the child. We don't want to come in after the fact and say we should have done this. But again, carte blanche, and even though Judge Tootin attempted to define what is reasonable in his exemplars, the order doesn't do it. It just says reasonable. And it's a great deal of leeway. How do you look at this intersection of rights to do testing and best interest of the child? And I say this in light of what we've had recently, these string of cases as to motor vehicles and the ability to test or not to test these days.
And yes, Your Honor, to answer the first question, I believe you said what between the intersection of the best interest in the child and being the allegations in the petition, the plain language of 432B540 include, it says if the allegations of the petition are substantiated, the department has to create a report. And within that report is going to be the plan for services. Included in the language of the statute under number 2 is that the department can make a plan as is consistent with the best interest and special needs of the child. So without limitation. So in the language of the statute itself, it is encompassing more than what is in the petition because we don't put the special needs of the child in the petition.
But it talks in terms of, in subset 2, C, the appropriateness of services to be provided under the plan and description of how the order of the court will be carried out. And this is where I'm struggling with what I consider possible vagueness as to this condition of what is reasonableness, because back in the day in showing the age, English 1 was Cal 1 is not Cal 2, Cal 2 is not Cal 3, English A. So what is reasonable to one caseworker may not be reasonable to another. And the examples were good, but they're not in the order. So if someone comes in the house and says, well, based upon what this person is doing, I think it's reasonable to test everybody in here as to drugs. No slurred speech, no blood, blurry eyes, nothing. Is that reasonable?
That particular circumstance, no, but that's not the case in this instant case.
Well, the order that I have, part of Ms. Hernandez will submit to drug testing if there is reason to believe that she is under the influence of controlled substance. And if positive, so on. It says it only defines it if there is reason. It doesn't tell us what that is. And I'm not sure that every caseworker will know what happened in court when the judge was giving exemplars, if that's not the order.
Okay. In reviewing the transcript of the hearing where the caseworker was present, he made an argument about why he, because the statute requires the Department of Family Services to proffer the plan and then why it would be appropriate. And when he was questioned, why do you want this in the case plan, he then talked about Mr. Hernandez.
What I'm saying, though, is when we get to the brass tacks and rubber meeting the road, the people that are going out in the field have to understand what his order is, how it's articulated. They're just picking up the cold file in some cases, unfortunately, and going out and trying to do the best job they can do.
I understand that. And actually, if the caseworker had transferred the case, they don't just read the court orders. They review the notes, which are taken by the worker in the standing in the hearing, and said, and they do reflect, Judge Tootin told me if she's appearing in front of me with indications that she's under the influence of slurred speech or she exhibits erratic behavior, then we can drug test her. So they don't rely on just the wording of the orders. They rely on what the judge is telling them and instructing them, and that happens a lot in our cases wherein the judge is going to give you very specific instructions in the hearing, and here's argument, and the caseworkers actually relay that to each other. Not only is this that particular man present at that particular hearing, her caseworker, who would be meeting with her, who would know that she has to appear individually under the influence in order to request a drug test. They are very clear about following the judge's orders and what that case plan requires. And there's always explanation behind every objective because they have to make sure when they report to the court continuously in these cases how the parents are complying with these objectives in action steps in the case plan. It requires an understanding of what services the department needs to do to consider reasonable efforts and what the parents need to do in order to comply with these things.
Let me ask you another question, and it kind of piggybacks a question that Justice Sherry asked, and that is, with this plan, if we take out this reasonableness condition, if the caseworker has probable cause, can they have the mother tested?
I believe that once a parent has been adjudicated as having neglected or abused her child and is under the supervision of the court, that if that person appears under the influence to a DFS caseworker in a meeting, that they can test because that is individualized suspicion that's required under Chandra v. Miller, and because we're not promoting criminal prosecution here. DFS does not test parents in turn as agents of law enforcement. We never pursue criminal prosecution.
Well, I understand that, but unfortunately, in this arena we're dealing with, the natural consequence is a death penalty for the parent if there's no reunification. It's even worse than a criminal prosecution, so to speak. That parent is no longer the parent of that child. So that's a whole other issue. But coming back to what I'm asking, if you have the ability to test with probable cause, why is it necessary to even have a condition as to reason to believe?
Why is it necessary in this case, or why would it be necessary in any case?
In general, because if you're imposing it, because it's not just a one-time thing, but it's specific as this case. But if you answer it either way you wish.
Well, as Your Honor just brought up, a lot of these times case plans are working towards reunification. Our statutes require that. But if something were to happen and it goes to termination, we need to make sure, and our district court judges admonish us about this all the time, we have to address the issues that keep parents from children. And if we are not doing the parents any services by not recognizing issues that need to be addressed, because if mom had an underlying drug issue and we never tested her and we never did anything and that's why she doesn't protect her children, then they're not safe with her and she can't reunify, and then it's unfair to all the parties to go to a termination proceeding not having addressed her underlying issues. So the department should be able to test and should be able to modify case plans as the unique needs of each family are identified through the process. And our statutes allow for that. Under NRS 432B570, a court can modify the case plan upon request. So if an issue comes in as one thing, but then later on you discover that she's doing that because she's high on drugs.
And what's the problem in this case? Issues. There's nothing in the record that mom was, quote, high on drugs. So we get into the other, which would be modifying or having a probable cause situation, opposed to just walking and saying, oh, her speech is slurred. It might be slurred because she was angry. It might be slurred for a number of reasons. Is that reasonable? Where what brought the child in was not her drug usage, or even suspicion of drug usage, so to speak. Just saying that the person is in the company of other people who use drugs, I'm sorry, in the society we live in today, that's a great big net, especially now that we have legal medical marijuana in this community.
Your Honor, Judge Tootin, I believe, shared that concern. That's why he narrowly tailored it. That's why he told DFS, who asked, can I randomly test her? He said no. Said, no, you have a clean test. You don't have any individualized suspicion. You cannot randomly test this woman. You have to have more. You have to have a little bit more investigation. You have to have a reasonable belief to do this. And then he gave that caseworker some guidance and instruction.
That brings me back to the question as to the lack of allegations in the case plan itself, or the petition itself, which generated the case plan. Assuming this provision wasn't in there, if at some point DFS is conducting its investigations and doing its meetings with her, they do have a reasonable belief that she is under the influence. Tell me the process to come in and amend the case plan to require testing at that point. Wouldn't that be more appropriate?
The answer to the first question is they would tell me I think that she's on drugs. I have to file a motion pursuant to that statute and get in front of the judge, and opposing counsel gets notice, opportunity to be heard, the due process rights are all there. Just like in the report and disposition, you get notice of what we were asking for, you get an opportunity to be heard, and we argue back and forth. The second question that you posed, wouldn't that be more appropriate before testing, and that is addressed in the Skinner case, is that if she's appearing under the influence and we don't test her, and they're required to test within 24 hours, if we don't have the right to test her then by the time we get to court, the drug is out of her system. And then
yes, but at that point you can move to modify because you have a reason. You have a belief that you can articulate specifically why you believe she was under the influence during a particular visit, and then make the motion to amend to include either random testing or testing such as this. Why wouldn't that be more appropriate?
More appropriate? I think that needs to be done. But more appropriate than administering a test that day?
No, for allowing this type of an order where the petition didn't allege any thing specific that would be of concern regarding drug abuse.
because the time process it takes to get to court, that drug test would not reflect her intoxication that day.
That's not the point I'm concerned with. It's that would trigger the request to modify the case plan to include either random testing or testing on a reasonable suspicion.
But if they tested on a reasonable suspicion and the test came back and there was something else going on, she might have some cognitive or other thing that's making her speech slur. So then those issues would need to be addressed as opposed to the drug test. If the drug test came back positive, then that would be the evidence upon which the court would now need to address a case plan service regarding substance abuse.
Under the circumstances where someone is under a case plan, if a worker went in the house and had a reasonable suspicion that drugs were being used, because of the past abuse, would they not have a reason to take the child out of the house until they could determine what the situation was?
Once the parent has been reunified and still under the court, yes, that can happen and has happened, unfortunately. And in those cases where the parent is being visited at the home after children are reunified, then the safety concerns become, you know, you're under supervision of the court, you know DFS is coming to your house, but you can't control your impulses enough to not use around your children. And that has, in cases, led to subsequent removals of these cases.
And just so I understand it, would they need another order from the court to remove the child in an emergency, what they consider an emergency because of reasonable belief, or could they, based upon their observation, remove the child and then attempt to figure out what's going on?
Our process at this time is to remove the child, then we put it before the court under and request a modification of court order, because the last court order was that this would be an in-home case upon reunification with mom or dad. So then we put it in front of the court, explain, do a full report as to what the emergency was, and have the court modify the order to be an out-of-home order. But it is required to be put back in front of the judge.
Thank you.
If there's an emergency situation, DFS is charged with the safety of children, so they would remove on emergency.
Let me just ask you one last question. And I know your time is up, and I'm going to add some time to you as well. How common is it for this provision, this particular provision, to be included in a case plan?
This particular provision?
Right.
It's not common. Sometimes we negotiate random testing, and then if you're positive, you have to do an assessment for substance abuse services. But the way that Judge Tootin had, he so narrowly tailored it that spelled out that you have to have individualized suspicion of her before you can test her. I don't know of any other case, having talked to the other attorneys, that provision specifically was in a case plan.
So in your experience, this doesn't pop up all the time?
No. What was more likely is if we have, if there's something going on in the case, you can be required to do random testing, and if anything comes up positive or a different drug than the one you originally tested positive for at different levels, then you would do an assessment.
Okay, thank you. Colleagues, any other questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Grigsby, I'm going to give you an additional 2 minutes.
I'd like to address what State had touched on regarding these type of things being added in the case plans. It is common for a petition to be adjudicated. We get to case plan, and DFS is asking to put things in the case plan that haven't been adjudicated on. There are times where we go and adjudicate a petition. They lose on certain allegations, but they still try to put that into the case plan. In some circumstances, the judges will keep those in the case plan, even if they weren't adjudicated, but when it's, and that brings up the due process issue, parent has to be noticed on what's at issue, what are the safety concerns regarding their particular child. When children are removed from a parent, they're given the petition, told this is what we believe is wrong in your parenting, this is what we need you to fix in order to get your children back. when we're putting in things that they're not put on notice, it violates the basic requirement of notice. If the other things come up, there's nothing stopping the DA to file another petition if other concerns
arise. But, counsel, do we create such a straitjacket with this notice that you're talking about that the department can't look to their obligation as to the best interest of the child?
They can, and if they find that there are other issues, they can bring that before the court, give the parent an opportunity to be heard.
We're talking about, and let's make it clear, and the district attorney walked us through, we're not talking about the first time in the household. We're talking about we have a problem. The case plan has been articulated, maybe not as well as it should be. So now everyone's on notice that we have a problem. We're trying to get the parent in a position for reunification. But the department walks back in, and they see a problem. Are they straitjacketed by the order, or can they exercise reasonable diligence, so to speak, for the best interest of the child?
I believe at that point, if they see other concerns that weren't adjudicated, that aren't part of the case plan, they go to their attorney, the district attorney, ask them to file another petition so those concerns could be addressed, or file a motion to amend the case plan, which at that time, the parent can ask for an evidentiary hearing for them to prove that those things are actually at issue. And especially with the drug testing, drug use does not equal abuse or neglect. The state actually has to prove that the drug use affects the parent's ability to...
The question now is impairment of behavior, in this case, potentially her inability to understand improper behavior by people around her that may affect the child.
And that objective is in the case plan. It's regarding her lack of protective capacity. She's given services to address that lack of protective capacity. And if going through those services, if there are other recommendations made, she has to follow through with those.
So would it have just been better to say that individual who is the alleged abuser should not be in the child's presence?
And sometimes those...
In this particular case, just flat say this person shouldn't be there, and unless he completes whatever it is he needs to complete, and our mom has to be of concern.
Well, in this case, I believe there was no contact order issued between the boyfriend who wasn't the father and the children, and also... So this doesn't happen again. Mom doesn't choose inappropriate people to be around her children. She's required to go through services to work on her protective capacity to address what brought the case in, which was her lack of protective capacity in caring for her child.
Well, and it it intimates as well that she wasn't surrounding herself with people that necessarily cared about the best interests of her children. And it's alleged that she covered up the facts that the boyfriend done this, and that the children fell off the bed. And when they were taken to the hospital, you know, the doctor essentially indicated the bruises and contusions were too numerous to count, and so that didn't make sense at all. And so the overall best interest of the child is, I guess, what the concern is for everybody. And why is this requirement so onerous, given the fact that she's associating herself with people who potentially abuse her children?
Well, she does have a constitutional right to associate with whoever she pleases.
Correct.
And if we're going to, I think that's even infringing on other constitutional rights that she has, because the state is concerned with the best interest, actually not even the best interest, the safety of the child. I mean, they can't go in and fix all the problems there are. They have to go in and fix whatever problems exist that affect the safety of the child.
Right.
And then they have to put the parent on notice, this is what it is, this is what you need to address, which is the case plan. So if the court allows them to put in whatever they could possibly think of, you're looking at situations where parents can never get their children back because they're not addressing what brought them in. They're speculating on what could possibly happen in the future.
Well, not necessarily. If they comply with the case plan, they're going to, I would assume, get their children back.
But if
and again, coming into the situation, there may be so much going on here that is underlying all the abuse and neglect. You do your best to vet it before the judge and try and come up with a case plan that's reasonably tailored to reunify this family. And so that's I'm just wondering why this particular provision is so onerous that she she can't comply with it. It's kind of the feeling that I'm getting from you, even though I know your argument is this is a due process issue. But.
And just based on Judge Tinton's order, he didn't just make his order specific to this case. He said he believes, in his order he states that any time that the department has reasonable suspicion, they can drug test a parent, whether it's in the case plan or not. So he didn't make an order specific to this case. He made a broad ruling that applies to every parent that comes in contact with Department of Family Services, and that's the overall problem with our system, that we're not narrowly tailoring the case plans to the concerns that the department has.
Well, I want to speak to you as a former assistant public defender and a special public defender in this community. Bad facts make bad law. And that's what the title of this is, Bad Facts. I think that you were premature in filing this writ. I don't think you needed to file it until a situation arose. And I just I just wondered if there was any consultation with your staff as to whether this should be pursued. I mean, you see the questions that my colleagues have asked. And their interest is the best interest of the child, really. And there seems like this is no harm, no foul. How long will this woman be subject to this this order? Where is she in the case? In other words, as to reunification. Are we a year away? Are we 6 months away?
I believe at this point we're 18 months in to the case.
And she's never been drug tested under this order except for the first drug test?
Not that I'm aware of. She has not.
Okay, just take my advice. Bad facts make bad law.
If I could just comment on that really quick. I don't believe these are bad facts given that it happens where we're putting things in the case plan that are not narrowly tailored to the petition. And it goes not just to this case. It goes over all the cases that came in. We see this situation coming up where we're putting things in the case plan that parents have no notice of. They have no opportunity to object to it, to have the allegations adjudicated against them. So I believe it's not just the order in this case is not just to this case. We see this pattern over and over again.
Well, just remember that when you negotiate the next time on a situation where there's really no drug abuse involved with the petitioner, that you make sure that that's not part of the order, at least and see how maybe a tutor or somebody else would handle it.
And that's the issue. We don't know that that's actually going to be in the case plan. I was the first time I found out that department was saying this was a concern was when I got the case plan. If I would have known if it was pled in the petition, I could have negotiated that that wouldn't be part of the case plan. Can't do that when my client's not put on notice of what's alleged in the petition.
Under the facts as you presented, how would you write a disposition in this matter? What would you say? If you were sitting where we're sitting, what would the disposition be, besides the petition granted? Would you say?
I would say that the case plan has to rationally relate to the adjudicated allegations in the petition. If a situation comes up, probable cause would be the standard to drug test a parent if it's not in the petition.
And then again, that brings me back to 432B. I don't see any language that is anywhere close to that. And so you're sticking out there strictly on a due process issue that I'm not sure would require all of that.
But, Judge, I believe in this court addressed parents being obligated to do a case plan in the matter of AG, where we had the non-offending parent. He was given a case plan even though there were no allegations substantiated in the petition. And this court found that the judge cannot order a non-offending parent who has no allegations against them to do a case plan.
That's a different situation that we were concerned with there.
But I believe the same logic applies, that when you have a petition that has certain allegations that have been substantiated, to deviate and say that we could put in other things in the case plan that the parent has no notice of, that violates the constitutional rights of the parent.
Okay, well, thank you so much, colleagues. Do you have any other questions?
Thank you for your argument.
All right, thank you both for your arguments. It was very well done, and we will stand in recess until the next case, and that will be 11:30.